Welcome to another episode of the Designers FM podcast. This week we're talking to the only second generation product designer that I know of. If you know of any other, then please let me know on Twitter or send me an email at david@designers.fm. Her name is Alexa Erasmchuk. She's Andre's daughter. Andre is a regular on the show. And she lives in the Bay Area. And I'm going to interview her about her life and her life as a designer and as a YouTube creator. Enjoy the episode.
Designers FM.
Designers FM.
Designers.
Designers.
Designers
FM.
Designers
FM.
Designers FM.
Designers FM.
Welcome to another episode of the Designers FM podcast. Today we have another interview. It's been a long time. The interview is with Alexa Erasmchuk. Alexa, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, other than you're the daughter of Andre, which I think is interesting, but it's more important who you are and what you're about.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Andre is my dad, but I'm Alexa. I'm a designer. I live in San Francisco, California. I've lived out here for about 8 years, just over 8 years, which is pretty crazy for me to think about. For most of my professional career, I've been a product designer. And then just most recently, I've switched roles into design operations, where I oversee design community, which is more of an external facing role, for Zendesk, which is a tech company based here in San Francisco, where we focus on customer service software.
Andre is your dad, and let's get this out of the way, because then we can talk about yourself, which is more interesting, I think. How was it growing up with a product designer? Because as you mentioned before we were chatting, like you're like a second generation product designer. I don't know anyone who is a second generation product designer. So how was that growing up with someone who's been in a field that you're now in?
Yeah, totally. And if there's any other second generation product designers listening to this, I would love to hear from them. I'd love to just have a conversation. I don't think there are that many out there yet. But yeah, my parents are actually divorced. So I mostly grew up with my mom out in Wisconsin, which is in the middle of the country in the United States. My dad was out in the Bay Area pursuing his career in product design and interaction design in the early 90s. So it's interesting. It's an interesting question because I didn't really know much about what my dad did growing up. And I would go back and visit. I would visit the Bay Area every summer for a couple of months or at least a month. So spent a lot of time in the area and I sort of knew what my dad did. I remember multiple times my dad would pull up Photoshop, a version of Photoshop, and he would show me that his name was in the intro credits.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the very beginning when you show who actually worked on the software. So I knew he worked on some pretty cool stuff. And that's actually, I think let's revisit that because that I think him really being proud of that, having his name on the software is something that has stuck with me that I really think about a lot in my work now. But anyway, I knew he, had a hand in some really cool stuff, but I didn't really know what he did. It wasn't until I decided to move out to the Bay Area to pursue a career in design more professionally where I actually understood what was going on and what he was doing. So I ended up, I grew up in Wisconsin and I was really passionate about basketball. I played basketball my whole life and I wanted to play in college. So I did that. I played for 2 years at a state school in northern Wisconsin, which is pretty much in the middle of nowhere in Wisconsin in the Midwest. And after 2 years, I just found myself super unhappy. I needed a change. I didn't know what it was, but I know I needed to get out of there. And so at the time I was studying graphic design. And even at that time, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I knew I liked this idea of doing craft-based work and that design had similarities. There were similarities with art and I like projects and art and that kind of stuff. But I didn't really know what I wanted to do with graphic design, but I was pursuing that degree. And so I remember my dad said, "Hey, Alexa, if you actually want to pursue a career in design, maybe you should consider going to a design school." And he even told me that in high school. And I was like, "No, dad, I play basketball. I'm gonna go to a school, play basketball. That's my thing." But then here I was in this moment of sadness, truly. I was very sad and frustrated with where I was at. And so I remembered that moment. And then I basically, the way I like to visualize it is I just felt like I hit like a big red button. I just wanted to reset.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, you should go to a design school. Great. I'll do that. I'll try that. So that basically led me to San Francisco, where I ended up studying graphic design at California College of the Arts, which is a art and design school in San Francisco. I had an amazing experience there. And truly, like when I first got there, I still didn't really know what I wanted to do. Just same degree, different city, actually at a focused craft school. And then it was my second semester studying graphic design there that they required us to start taking interaction design courses. And so it was in my like 101 class of interaction design that I discovered product design or UX design, even though my dad has been doing this my whole life. I discovered it on my own and was like, wow, this is what I want to do. And then from that moment on, after I brought that to my dad, realizing that this was what he did, truly, at that moment on, I was like, this is what I want to do. And then I'm so grateful because I got so much like mentorship truly from my dad and learning a lot of lessons. And I think having important conversations that I don't think you get at school. No. And that made a really big impact on my life. And I think also just helped me in really big ways in my career, even so much so as I reflect back on a lot of what I talk about on my YouTube channel too, which we can talk about later. I have a YouTube channel where I talk about design, careers in tech, life in San Francisco, that kind of stuff. And so a lot of those lessons I know I initially learned from my dad early on.
Awesome. And is it because we were talking about this last week with two freelance illustrators, and we were talking about that I didn't really pursue going to art school because I was thinking like, then I'll become an artist. And I hear this over and over with a lot of people now in UX and product design positions that they fail to pursue like art school but there's no money in art school. Was this something that you also thought and then suddenly realized like, hey, my dad's actually doing this and he makes money and he is pretty successful?
Good question. I can't say that I had any of those thoughts. I feel super lucky. I think my parents have always just been super supportive with whatever it is I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
I can even remember back, right, to like college is very expensive in the States. So I remember back to even just deciding like where to go to college and signing paperwork and student loans and stuff. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't realize how much any of the stuff costed. I just had no idea, truly. I really wish I would have been inspired to understand it a lot more. A lot of just getting into UX design was a happy accident for me. I did multiple internships while I was still in college. All were paid. At a really, really great experience with an internship at Yelp, which is a big tech company here in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And that led to my first job out of college, which I had already lined up while I was still in college. I pretty much was able to like start paying off my student loans right away. And it was a happy accident. And I always actually like to say, I think success comes from a combination of hard work and getting lucky.
Yeah.
So it's not that I didn't work very hard, which I very much did. But there's also this important sense of you need those serendipitous moments in your life. So doing things that scare you, meeting new people, going out into the world and being unfamiliar with something, like it requires you to also do a bit of that. And yeah, I think I feel super lucky that my parents just let me do whatever it is I wanted to do. But then also once I discovered design and that my dad also did this role, it made a huge impact on my life.
Yeah.
Just like the internship part in particular, like I remember I just moved to San Francisco. It was probably within my second semester at CCA. And my dad was like, what are you going to do over the summer? Good point. Usually I coach basketball and hang out with friends, but now I'm in the city. I don't know a lot of people. So you should probably try to get a job. Like you continue learning about design, make money over the summer.
Exactly.
Great idea, Dad. I'm going to try that. And at the time I was also, I technically lost about like a semester's worth of credits when I transferred. So I was in a group with mostly like sophomores, even though it was more of a junior level.
Yeah.
So it's sophomore is like second, you've spent 2 years in college, juniors 3 years. So I was a bit older than most of my peers in those classes. So none of them were thinking about internships because the school didn't really even require internships until your third year. And so it was really great. And I think important that my dad was like, maybe get a job, maybe do an internship, because that made, again, a big difference on my path. to how it led into my career.
Is that a big lesson for maybe people that are listening, that taking these chances of doing internships and developing something outside of your craft to really kickstart your career? Is that something that you would advise like people to start doing right now when they're still in college?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge proponent of internships. The thing is, there are a lot of people looking for internships and not a lot of internship opportunities. And I think that's a complicated problem. I think it's a combination of a couple of things. One, I think there's a lot of work to be done on the business side, like on the company side, to set up that sort of career framework in place to ensure that people who would come in and have an internship there, like in the design role, will have a good experience. Yeah. There's a lot of just like complicated logistical things that need to happen. And it really truly does have to be net positive for the business. And there's a great business case for that. And I've been looking into this a lot because I've been able to actually do a bit of this work at my company. And I'm really excited about like where we can take internships and that sort of stuff at Zendesk within the creative department. Like, I think that's a huge important piece that has to be put in place. And if it's not, like, it's not. And it doesn't mean that that company should just start doing internships right away.
Yeah.
And then just like on the other side, I think there's like a problem with empathy almost. I think there's a lot of students that don't understand, or people who want to get internships that don't understand what it takes to put all this in place logistically and make sure that it's both successful for the interns and for the business.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, I think there's a great business case for why you would want to bring in new talent and new perspectives. People who've just come from like either a bootcamp program or a university, they bring new ideas, as well as it being a great opportunity for professional development for more senior people on the team. So there's this great opportunity to bring all these people together, but there's not a lot of opportunities out there yet.
Yeah.
But that being said, I always say that just because something is hard does not mean you should not pursue it. So again, huge proponent of internships. Anyone who's out there who's starting out, like really go for it. Try your best to get one. It's a hustle, but just know it's going to be challenging.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is interesting, because interviewing for an internship almost feels like interviewing for an actual job. There's a lot of preparation involved, and it's a good skill to have interviewing nonetheless. It's okay to fail at those interviews. So you can do 10 interviews for an internship, and if you fail 9 and you take one, that's also a win, because the knowledge is also in the experience and in the process.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the truth is that interviewing for any job or trying to get any new job is challenging. And just then you make it your first time, it's going to be that more new and potentially scary, and you don't understand how things work. So yeah, I think it's really important to just know it's going to be hard and uncomfortable. And even like when I remember when I was interviewing for my last job, which I ended up getting a job at Zendesk, I felt so defeated. Like even as someone who had a like big name tech company on my resume, I was feeling so down. And so defeated about things and not confident in myself when I started receiving all this rejection. Yeah. And it happens to everyone. And I think most importantly, you have to really dig down deep. What do you want? Got to persevere through, bring people into your network, into your community, who you can really talk to and like sort through things, get better, improve your portfolio, improve your presentation. I think that's a really big part of it, how you communicate about your work. But yeah, it's gnarly. It can be really challenging.
What would you say are the things that at Yelp, at your first internship, that you really learned there that benefited you throughout your career?
So that was a really interesting job that I did at Yelp. I was a new grad who ended up, because they needed help on the specific area of the product, I ended up working on their business product. And I didn't know anything about business. I didn't have necessarily any interest in business. I think when most people think about Yelp, they think about the consumer product, which is more of as a user or as someone who's using Yelp, like searching for a lunch spot or searching for a plumber or using it to search for a place to get reviews. But I ended up working on the business product. So that was really cool. It pretty much opened my eyes into this whole other area of product design that I didn't really think of, because I was only in school. I hadn't worked on any sort of like business software tool or any of that kind of thing. So I think really early on at Yelp, I learned a lot more about business and the business side of how companies work, which was something that now I really love. And, and Zendesk is a business software, enterprise software company too. So I moved to another company within enterprise software or within business software. So that was definitely a big lesson that I learned, was just within business. And then the other thing too is that at Yelp, I was pretty much a team of one working on the specific area of the product that I did. And so it really required me to go out and seek information without the help of someone guiding me there. And so that meant like inserting myself in certain meetings and making friends with the engineering team, setting up reoccurring meetings with the people that I was closely working with, kind of all on my own. I don't exactly remember how I got to that point, other than I think I was just trying to figure it out. Like, I was just curious, and I know I needed more information to make decisions. And so I was just like, hey, can I come to this thing? Just because I want to learn about it. I think that was, I gained some really important skills there, even though, again, it was really hard. And ultimately, I didn't feel like I'm very much a team player, and I like working with other people. And I didn't feel like I was a part of like a growing design team within that specific area I was focused on. So I was like, I think I want to move on to something else at this point. So even though it was challenging, and I went into the opportunity with a different expectation, like fresh out of school, I'm going to work with a senior product designer. I'm going to learn all the things from them. And I did have those people on my team, just not on the same area of the product. So even though I didn't get that experience, I was able to gain a lot of skills because I sort of lack of having that guidance to guide me through that.
You come over as someone who's proactive and likes the community effect. Would you say that outside of your craft, that's like a really important skill in design? And is there a way for maybe more introverted people to get around this, to get that knowledge that you have by being proactive, by reaching out to people? Is there a way around this for more like introverted people to also get this skill?
I've thought about this a little bit, because I'm not sure if someone with a different personality to me would have had the same experience that I did, especially in that role. It did really require me to, put myself out there in a way that even I felt uncomfortable with. And I love people, and I like have all this energy, and I love going out and doing that kind of work. That, I think it's really important to not let something like knowing you're introverted and that you take in energy differently, to not let that hold you back from growth and from doing something that's uncomfortable. So I think even if you're more introverted in this sort of stuff, this sort of going out there and maybe making friends with the engineering team, that kind of stuff scares you, I think it's just, you got to figure out the right way that works for you. And that would probably looks different than what it will look like for me, but there are ways to do that work for you. And I think it's just, again, you don't want to let that hold you back.
No. And I think like one benefit of the whole remote culture now is that I think for a lot of introverted people, it's easier to reach out on Slack and through email and through text and to harass people asking for attention, quote unquote, than it was that actually to physically go over to the people, especially when you're completely new into in a company and you have all these people that you have to meet. And then there's all these other people that you also want to meet because it's super interesting. That's maybe like the benefit now of remote work. After Yelp, you went on to a next job. What was that job after Yelp?
Yeah. After Yelp, I went to Zendesk, which is where I'm at now.
How was that transition from Yelp to Zendesk, and how much of the internship helped you get the position at Zendesk?
Yeah. So I said this, but it was very challenging. I was ready to leave Yelp. I felt like I had maximized my potential there as far as growth goes. So I was ready. I even knew, like, I wrote down, these are like the next three things that I want to focus on with my next job. These are my goals. Wrote that stuff down. And I went and interviewed at a bunch of companies, and I just kept getting rejection. It was very challenging. But ultimately, I landed my job at Zendesk after many iterations of not necessarily my like online portfolio, but I discovered that there was flaws, or I think gaps rather, in my offline portfolio, which is something I like to talk about on my YouTube channel, which is really more of like the thorough presentation version of my portfolio that I was presenting actually like in person at interviews.
Yeah.
So I had, instead of going and asking people for feedback on my portfolio, like online portfolio, which I was already getting interviews through. I was asking people for feedback on that presentation version. And I remember I met with a woman through just one of those like online mentorship opportunities. I forget exactly which one it was right now. But we met up and I walked her through my presentation. And then she actually showed me hers, like the one that she had gotten to get her last job. And just like lightning struck for me. I was like, oh my gosh, I see where the gap is. But ultimately I was tweaking my presentation. I got that job at Zendesk. And again, Zendesk is also an enterprise business software company. I was working on that at Yelp. Actually, more specifically, I was doing work at Yelp that was focused on the monetization aspect of the business product. The job I had applied for at Zendesk was a product designer on the billing team, so overseeing the buying experience. So it was very parallel. And again, I think early on in your career, I don't think you should be super focused necessarily on what you like, even like the industry that you aspire to be within. I didn't know a lot about customer service software. I was just trying to, my goals, like those three things that I wrote down, were more focused on skills I wanted to learn, because I knew, okay, maybe that next job, that will be aspirational. I know I love like health tech, and there are these aspects that I really love, especially in school. I realized like I really aspired to like work on these types of problems. But I was like, that would be extra. If I found a health tech company, that would be awesome. I love those problems, but I wasn't really focused on that. But again, I had this background in business software and more specifically on the billing platforms. And so that led me to that job at Zendesk. And I, for the first 2.5 years of my time at Zendesk, I was overseeing the buying experience. And it was really great. Really gnarly problems to be solved. Very interesting work. But yeah, more recently, I've switched roles within Zendesk to be on our design operations team.
And would you mind sharing the portfolio feedback that you got from your mentor? Would you share maybe one or two tips, and then we'll the rest of them they can watch on your YouTube channel?
Yeah, totally. And honestly, it was quite a while back now, so I'm trying to really think about what specifically it was. But from what I remember, I don't think I was framing the problem at the very beginning very clearly. So I remember I inserted like a slide. I had two core projects that I was presenting, so I inserted like a more of a summary and a really clear, this is the problem, this is the goal slide at the very beginning. And then I also think there was potentially a gap in something research related too. It was, I think, 3.5 years ago now. So it was quite a while back, but it was things that might seem obvious, but just walking it through with her, I was like, oh, I should put one of these slides in there, duh, kind of thing. So I don't know. I don't feel like I can specifically say tips related to my project work. Just the thing that I think I would want to leave people with is that I really believe that you should put together two portfolios, and that your online portfolio serves a different purpose than your offline one.
Yeah.
And that online one, it's really good for, you want to like get someone excited about you and your work. So it's like a short summary, again, high level sort of information. What's the problem? What's the goal? What was your role? Really show off some of these final designs, and then you can show the research underneath all of that to what you are comfortable with sharing or what you're allowed to share. But that's an important story to tell at that point in your journey to getting a job. But really, you should spend a lot of time taking your work and putting it into a presentation version, because that's going to be like the story you're going to tell and present at an in-person interview. And that's where you want to have full control over the situation where you're presenting in front of an audience and walking them through that story. And with an online website, not only is technology like will potentially fail you, whether it's the internet going out or an image not loading or whatever it is, if you've written your like project on your portfolio for someone who would need to read through it and understand it while you're not there, there's probably going to be way more text on the screen than you will need. And someone's going to be distracted, trying to read it, not listening to you fully. Put your work into a presentation. You have control over the story. And you can walk someone through it slide by slide. And so I'd recommend that people really think through putting those two pieces together simultaneously. And then when you're starting to interview, if you are not getting interviews, you have to tweak your portfolio, the online portfolio itself. And then if you are getting interviews and you are getting to the point where you're presenting it, and that's where you're not getting through to the next round, then that's the one you should focus on tweaking and improving. So you can think about it in those two stages.
Those tips are great. And I think reminds me of I think something Andre said when he was interviewing, I think it was at Twitter or Yahoo, where they were like flipping through 50 portfolios in an hour to get this first screening session. And I think that's where it's really important to like really catch their attention. But I think once you're getting through that round, that's when you have to really nail like the story from A to Z.
Yeah. And actually, I've talked so much about portfolios with my dad, especially when I was in college. And so I understood that was the process really early on. And then I also remember during school, I was in this professional development class that everyone takes to graduate. And we were visiting companies like in the Bay Area. I remember we were at Pinterest once, and the VP or the director of design there said the same thing. And I was like, okay, I understand. And I think that's part of what's challenging about starting out is you just don't know. And so I've helped hire people before now. I've done that process of reviewing portfolios. Like, I know how challenging it is and how much time you are actually given to review portfolios. You get a stack of 100 of them. You don't get a lot of time to make a first impression. And so there's a couple of things that you should really focus on as the person who's like applying to a job to really capture someone's attention and be super clear and precise about your work so that you get to the next round. Because again, once you get to the next round and you're on the phone with someone, then you have control over the conversation and can really dive deeper into whatever it is that you want to make sure that they know about you and your work.
I think someone critiqued this, the comment that that you're making and that your dad also made by saying, yeah, this is not a good process, like judging 40 or 50 portfolios in an hour. It isn't, but it's the truth, right? This is what happens. And even if they would actually spend the time going through those portfolios, like after portfolio 10, you're just fatigued and you're just like, you give up like giving the same amount of attention to those other portfolios. So I think it's just, but deal with the situation and make sure that your one stands out on this big pile of other things.
Yeah, absolutely.
We talked about it a little bit already. Like at Zendesk, was that there that you started doing like more content creation and started your YouTube channel? Like how did this start? Was this something at Zendesk that sparked this?
It was not. I was working at Zendesk when I started my YouTube channel, but it wasn't necessarily inspired by Zendesk specifically, although I'd say it probably is a bit more now. I started my YouTube channel in January of 2018. And initially I started it for a couple of reasons. The first was I wanted to get better at public speaking. Actually, the year before I had two opportunities to be in front of a camera, like sharing my story, and I totally fumbled through it. One of them I didn't even do at all because I was too scared. I think it was potentially one of those I would have been on TV kind of opportunities. Awesome. And I was very scared, but I wanted to do it. But I was like, I couldn't. And then the other opportunity was I was doing like a video interview. This is another story, but I started a basketball league that year. And so I was running a basketball league for a couple seasons. So I was doing an interview with a basketball organization, like a basketball startup. And again, we filmed the interview. I did it with a friend, watched it back later, and was just horrified with how it went. Because in my head, I was like, so clear what I want to say. I know, like, I have a lot of important things to say, but when I watched it back, I was like, wow, that did not come out how I imagined it would in my head. And I just wanted to be better. Like, I had all these ideas and I had all these thoughts and I wanted to get them out there, but it just wasn't coming out clearly. One reason why I started this channel was because I wanted to get better at public speaking. And a great way to practice is to actually just watch yourself talk back in a camera, listen to yourself speak. It's not that bad. But that was one. I think the other was also just I've always been interested in film and video. I think it's an incredible way to tell a story. It's so dynamic. Definitely. There's so many layers you can add into it. So it's just fun. I wanted to learn how to do that. And then the third was I've been in the Bay Area, like I said, for just over 8 years. And so I've met with a lot of people, a lot of designers. This area has such a big design community. And so people are just constantly wanting to meet up and talk about design, talk about career, and at meetups or events, just there's all this like great conversation going on. So for the earlier parts of my career, anytime someone reached out to me and wanted to meet up and talk about design, I would do it. And so eventually I realized this, and this is now probably 6 or 7 years into living in San Francisco, I realized I was telling a lot of the same stories. And so I was like, I want to get into video. I want to potentially start a YouTube channel. What am I going to talk about? I can talk about design. I'm sharing a lot of these same stories and all these conversations I have with designers at like coffee shops and stuff. Like, why don't I start there? And then I could share those stories with even more people. Like, how cool is that? So those were three things that came together at the same time, as well as I always say, at least for me, if you really want to get help with starting a new project, bring a friend in to it. Yeah. I'm someone who, again, I said this already, but I really love collaboration and group work. And again, at that same time, one of my friends who was a software engineer at Airbnb at the time, Luba, she wanted to start a YouTube channel. So we were, let's do it together. Let's try this out.
Awesome.
So I initially started my YouTube channel with her. It was supposed to be like the life of a UX designer and a software engineer. Like, how do they work? What are the dynamics between the two roles? Whatever, that kind of thing. We probably made 4 or 5 videos before we decided we have enough content and enough stories to tell that we should probably just make our own channel.
Yeah.
But that is how it started out.
How were the first reactions and how did that help or maybe stop you from going forward or pursuing your thing?
Totally. It was definitely helpful initially, I think, to have a friend. We both had our like channel together. So we were both kind of sharing out the channel and seeing if we could share it in like Facebook groups and with our friends and family, like trying to get people to subscribe and stuff. But basically, let's see, after the 4th or 5th video, Luba wanted to start experimenting with just her own channel and putting content
yeah.
on it that was more focused on software engineering. And she literally posted one video on a blank channel and it went viral, blew up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so pretty remarkable. And she's killing it right now. She's doing really great. But our channel was still, our shared channel was still associated with her channel. So as that channel was blowing up, we got a good bump from it as well. I remember I was traveling. I was like in New Orleans at the time, like on vacation. And I was getting a bunch of emails. People subscribing to our channel. And I was like, Luba, what's going on? And that's where she told me her video was going viral. And the video was, it was a day in the life of a software engineer at Airbnb. Especially back in 2018, there was this trend on YouTube where people were posting these day in the life videos at tech companies. So software engineer was a really big one at the time. So her video did really well from that. I think it was a year later, I posted a video, a day in the life of a UX designer
in
San Francisco. You did? Okay, great. And that video went viral for me. I remember I posted it. It was up for about a month. And then after that month, it just spiked. It just, YouTube was sharing it like with tons of people. And still to this day, this is like the one video that most people like enter into my channel from. And it's very old at this point. I cringe. People still watch it because I've gotten so much better with content creation. But hey, it still tells, I think, what I was hoping to be a more compelling and interesting day in the life sort of video, because it's hard to share. You can't really talk a lot about the specifics of the work within your, like within Zendesk, for example, because that video shows a day in the life of a UX designer in San Francisco, but at Zendesk. So I have shots around Zendesk and some people on my team show up and stuff. So it's fun, but it still is like somewhat high level because you can't really share about the specifics of the work due to legal reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always like the hardest part. You want to share a lot of stuff and some, like most of the time, like the great stuff is in the details, but you can't share it. Was this an eye opener for you? Okay. This is the type of content that I need to create or want to create to grow your audience or be more interesting or.
Yeah, really great question. It's something I've been thinking a lot about lately, I'll be honest. But early on with my channel, I was really just trying to focus on personal stuff. Like, I think the best work, some of the videos I'm most proud of, are just things I've been trying to sort out in my head. And then I'll make it because I'm trying to make sense of it. And then that resonates with someone else. And that sort of, that's what really means a lot to me. Wow, I shared something maybe more vulnerable or something where I'm just being myself. I'm just trying to figure something out and I make sense of it. And then someone else, like that resonates with them. That just means a lot to me. So I think there's a balance where I'm at now because I really am trying to grow my channel and I'd love to see more people subscribe and build up the community because I really love design education. I would love to help as many people as I can with finding clarity with whatever it is they want with their career in design. So for me, I've been thinking a lot more about how I can be more strategic with my videos. I loved making that day in the life video. It actually took me like 2 months to film and produce. It was not a day,
yeah.
but that was a strategic video. Like I made that because I knew there was a trend.
Yeah.
And I was hoping that video would do really well. So not only was it was a great mix of both. Not only was it really great, like I was just trying to like make sense of my day, but it was a trend and it was a really good strategic decision on my end because it's definitely drived a lot of traffic to my channel over even the last 2 years since it's been up. I think now where I'm at with things, I've just reached about 18,000 subscribers, which I'm really proud of.
Nice.
But I'm really trying to be more focused on storytelling. So I watch a lot of YouTube and I watch a lot of like tech and design YouTube. And I think there still is a need for more like storytelling within the videos, within this sort of space. So I always like to start with a story, something personal, really bring people into like, why should they care about this thing? Like, why does it matter? What was I thinking? Just as an example, because a lot of it's just me sharing moments from my life. Why was this important to me? Why was I thinking so deeply about this? And then have you thought about this? Like, maybe you should think about this as well. So really starting with that part and then being really like sharing something that people can really hold on to and hopefully learn from and maybe just integrate into their life. I really try to be as unauthoritative as possible with my content. I think a lot of it's just, this is my experience. This is what I've learned. Like, you could try this out for yourself. You got to try stuff out for yourself. What I did might not work for you, but this is what worked for me. So I try to come from that sort of place. But so really focus on storytelling. That's the new wave of Hello, I'm Alexa videos, as well as I'm really trying to focus on being entertaining also. So that means like going out and just trying to integrate more, like being more, I don't know, making it design education fun, not always just, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but I'm trying to make it entertaining, the storytelling, entertaining and educational. Those are the pillars.
I think it's really important to have that in your mind that you want to build this story and be also entertaining and be educational. There was one other thing that we talk about on the show, which is everyone needs representation in a field they want to go. Luckily for me, there's a lot of white men in tech. So for me, it's not a problem to see, oh, I can go there. There weren't, and there still aren't as many like female people in tech and in leadership. Is that something you're also aware of, that you are like a role model for females that I want to go into tech and maybe like they're looking up to you and like, hey, I want to pursue that career? Are you conscious when you're making these videos?
Yeah, good question, David. I love that I'm potentially a female role model for women in design or people who want to get into tech. I honestly do not think about it a lot. I just am showing up. I want to make videos that resonate with people. I happen to have a lot of people in my audience. I think a majority of people in my audience who are female.
Yeah.
And so I love it. I think that's great. But I'm just showing up, doing my thing. I would want to invite anyone who resonates with my story to be a part of whatever it is that I'm building, the community that I'm building. So it's not that I'm focused on a specific group of people per se, but yeah, I'm a woman. I've really tried to make my channel and my content more feminine. That's how I like to identify. I've been definitely like embracing that. Yeah. So if you resonate with that, come on in. I'd love for you to be part of this. But I honestly don't think about it that much.
No, but I think it's really important that there's different people from different like angles, like telling maybe the same story. And I think I became quite conscious of this, like when doing like the podcast, that the first hunch I got was like, oh, let's invite friends. Oh, that's mostly men. Okay, maybe get some more diversification. Totally. And then also you'll see in the numbers people are listening, my listeners, I think the majority is men, which is like normal, or maybe it's expected because I invite mostly men. And then also, this is also why I'm trying to like make this a little bit more diverse, introduce like a diverse audience. So I get that you're saying that you're not conscious about it, but you're aware that this is like a side effect, a positive side effect of what you're doing.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think it's more so that I love it when anyone wants to, I would love to invite anyone who's interested, even a very tiny bit, to become a creator, because it's been just an amazing experience. So whatever you look like, whoever you identify, like if you want to put yourself out there and create something and invite other people to be a part of it, like you should do it. And just, I think we are seeing way more people with all these various unique backgrounds coming into this space and making and sharing themselves. And I love that. And so I'm a part of that too. Like, I know that And actually, I know a lot of women design YouTubers now. I think I personally know, like, I've got a sort of a community of people I talk to in that space. I think most of my friends are, like, most of my YouTube friends within design are. But yeah, I think it's a really great time to just put your story out there, no matter how you identify or look like. And I promise it'll be a rewarding experience. Again, it's challenging, it's hard for many reasons, but I love it. And I think more people should be invited to do that.
Definitely. I think that's great advice. So here's another question. Where do you see yourself in 5-10 years? Have you dreamt about this? And if it's more like in the design space, more in the YouTube space, more in like the creator space?
10 years is so far in the future.
I know.
It's hard to dream out that far in advance because things change so much. Honestly, I did not anticipate this new career change from product design to design operations. I had no idea. I just started making YouTube videos, and that pretty much was a huge reason as to why I switched roles at Zendesk. So it's hard to say even 5 years out, because this all happened for me within like a year's time. I love making videos. I love building community. I love telling stories. I love meeting new people. So I really absolutely plan to make videos probably for the rest of my life. I love this medium. So I think wherever that takes me, I would love to follow that path. I think I will always be, and I always will continue to identify as a designer as well. Even though my role is not designing products anymore, everything I do within my role is designing. I'm designing experiences like virtual events, hopefully physical experiences again, once we have a vaccine and the pandemic is in the past, yeah. A couple of years down the line. I design presentations all the time. A lot of what design truly is, I think, is communication.
Definitely.
And so I'm constantly doing that, yeah, in my role. So I think what I've decided is that I don't think any of us really know what we're doing ever. Like, maybe we know what we're doing the very exact moment that we're living in, sure. But I think the rest of it, it's just so hard to predict. So I've decided is that as long as I continue to be a creator, as long as I'm making and creating every day, certainly every week, and I just follow where the energy takes me, then I'll figure it out. And that's where it'll lead me. So maybe I'll start a business. Maybe I'll write a book. Maybe I'll design a course. Maybe I'll become a full-time YouTuber. Maybe I'll level up at Zendesk to be some sort of director position. I don't know. I'm just going to keep creating and follow the energy and see where it takes me.
Awesome. Is that kind of your mantra, like waking up every day and just create stuff, and then you'll see where that takes you?
I guess so, in a sense. I'm someone who loves Mondays. I think I've heard at least a lot of people don't like Mondays and they dread the start of the week. I just wake up Monday morning and it's my favorite thing. I'm like, getting started with the day. I'm going to get into work. I'm going to make my matcha. Definitely. I love matcha. And so I try to wake up with that mentality every day, but I especially love the beginning of the week. So yeah, I'd say in a sense, it's like, I think energy is really important. And for whatever reason, I have a ton of energy. I know not everyone has the same amount of energy that I do. And because I recognize that I have all of this energy, all I want to do is give it to other people. So if I can help energize someone else, even if it's just in that one moment, the beginning of their day or whatever it might be, like, I want to be that person for them.
That's really aspirational, because I've noticed this year that I think the whole world, I think the numbers were 40% more depressed people, like, yeah. below the age of 40. And I've noticed that it's like people are cynical by nature sometimes, and being positive and saying something positive and treating people positive is like, it's hard. And I think that's what it's great. What you're saying is, like, if you can transfer this positive energy to other people, it really helps, right? Because if you're in a group of friends and you walk in and you're smiling and you're blah, 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 you're doing all these positive things, it's very easy for those people around you to be affected by your positivity and then also take it into their day.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard that too. I've heard that we're at record-breaking numbers as far as like depression goes, a lot of issues with young people and anxiety. And that's really hard. It physically controls your life. Like, yeah. It might start as a mental thing, but it totally overcomes you within a physical way. And so that's a really hard place to be in. And it's baby steps, I'd say. And mindset is a huge part of it. And yeah, again, I would love to, I think I really understand life to be challenging and hard. And I've learned to just embrace it. Like, I love that. I want to solve that problem. I don't want to let anything stop me or tear me down. I have the freedom to do whatever I want, especially living in the States. Like, I've really learned that I can be or do whatever I want. Life is really hard. Yeah. And you're going to be put in front of many challenges. I think this year has proven to be even more challenging than most, especially with a lot of the challenges we're facing with racial justice. And a lot of people are facing some really horrible things that I even can't necessarily empathize. I can't even put myself in some people's shoes because their life experience is so different than me. Yeah. And again, I don't think that's the point. I think even no matter where you're at in your life, you can continue down this path of being sad, mad, frustrated, angry. You can take that energy and go off of that energy, or you can turn around and really try to be better, just be better than yourself. Try to be better than yourself was yesterday. I think there's like a phrase there.
Yeah,
and it's baby steps, and bring people into your life that will bring you up and turn stuff around. So I don't know. I really try to be just like as much as I can a positive force on the world or on other people. Being realistic about the challenges is a huge aspect of it, for sure.
Definitely. The great takeaway there is surround yourself, be positive, surround yourself with positivity as well. And then it's so much easier to go through.
I was just going to say, I think because I can't necessarily speak to a lot of the racial things in particular, because I'm a white woman, but I think I have my own personal experience with other aspects that I think I could give as an example for something that I've learned just being a woman and how I've learned to just persevere and like kind of work through the challenges. So just as an example, two things that come to mind for me. One is that I love basketball. I've been playing basketball my whole life. I go and play pickup basketball often when it's not pandemic time. And especially when I first moved here, I was playing pickup mostly because I didn't know about the leagues. A large majority of people who play pickup basketball are men. It's just like how it is. I have been a basketball coach in my past, and I love it when like there are, like I love helping other like women or young girls get involved in basketball. There's a ton, but just the truth is, at least for now, a lot of the people who play pickup are men. That has never stopped me from going and playing pickup. I understand physically I'm smaller. I'm weaker than a lot of the guys out there, even like slower, just like physically, my body is different. That's never held me back. And that it's made me a better basketball player. I go out there, I show up. Once people know that I can hang and that I can shoot and I can pass, they then want me on their team because I'm a good team player. And I just show up, I be myself. And I've had a positive impact on the people who bring me onto their team, as an example. So that's something that I feel like maybe you could say, shoot, are there any women playing basketball? I'm not going to play basketball. Or I just am going to go play basketball anyways. No one is holding me back from that. Sure, it's uncomfortable at first. It's maybe challenging. I feel a little bit like I'm the other because I look different and I'm physically different.
Yeah.
But shoot, like I go and I persevere through and I have a good time. And then I make a bunch of friends. That's been my experience. And then the other one that comes to mind for me is actually with like age. I am 29 years old, but I probably still look like I'm 24 or 25. Like I just look like I'm younger than I am. And I even dress that way. I have a YouTube channel. I think my personality comes off young. And when we were going into the office, like I look younger than I am. That's fine. I also see that as an opportunity to take on a great challenge where if I were to go into a meeting with some really important people at work, maybe some VPs, C-level, whatever it might be, perhaps you could expect, I don't know, looking young, people just naturally have certain biases to when they imagine someone who's young versus someone who's older, may have more experience. But I have a lot of experience and I've done a lot of work on myself to get better at communication and come to a meeting with a clear agenda. We're going to get something done. We're going to, whatever it is that, whatever this meeting, this imaginary meeting, whatever we're set out to do. I know that I look younger, but if I'm going to go into meeting, I know that immediately once I start talking and presenting something, I'm going to gain the confidence of the people in the room because I know what I'm talking about. And I know what I'm doing. Just because I look younger isn't going to hold me back. So again, I think that's just another opportunity for me to just have this great challenge in front of me to prove. Again, with bias, you can't even, it's somewhat, you can't really point at it. Like, yeah. I think it just is something that we all hold to just like kind of look bias in the face and say, no, like, I got this. I'm going to do my thing. And I know by the end of this meeting, people will trust me that I know what I'm doing because I do.
Yeah.
So again, I don't think any of this stuff is straightforward or easy. It's a huge challenge, and everyone's life experience requires them to, we all have different privileges and life experiences. And so I just don't think it's about comparing ourselves. I think it's about really digging deep inside and persevering through that and bringing people into your life that can be a positive impact on what you want to do and what you want to achieve. And that does make a big difference.
Awesome. You're really self-conscious, and also you're confident in those situations that you know, like, hey, there's a status quo. And I know that status quo is I'm female and people think of me like this because I'm young. You can accept the status quo and be like, okay, this is, be frustrated about the fact that this is the status quo. Or you can be confident and self-conscious and say, I'm going to challenge the status quo. I'm going to be positive. I'm just going to hammer through. And your experience has been that this actually has worked. And I think that's a great takeaway for people to try to stay positive, even though, and for me, it's really easy to say because I'm privileged being a white male and I know that, but it's, I think it's really easy also to disregard that positivity is really helping you get better at the out of situations.
Yeah. And I think it's just, from my experience, at least, I see that this sort of approach having more long lasting change, which I think is what we all want. We all want to, however we look like, however we identify, we want to be able to show up and be respected, basically.
Yeah.
And I think this, what I've learned is like when you go in it into it with a challenge and have a positive attitude and aren't angry, just like looking at it in the face and saying, no, this is not how it's going to be, that then you make friends and you like can better understand everyone else's life experience that's led them to be where they're at. And I think then they'll have a positive experience with you. Like all these guys I play basketball with, like they also, they know like next time a woman player comes on that they don't need to have, I don't know, whatever their bias would be initially about women players. Like, no, if someone comes to play with the guys, like they'll play. And then maybe we will actually see more women play basketball at pickup. And that would be awesome. I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Small steps, baby steps, as you said.
Small steps, yes.
We're almost at the end. I want to give the opportunity, the last like couple of minutes of the show to ask you, is there anything that you like to promote? Your own channels, a good cause, friends, family, like anything?
Huge shout out to my dad, Andre Hrazimchuk. Thank you so much for everything that you've helped with me with my career in design. And I just am, I'm endlessly grateful because I think I definitely would not be where I'm at without that help and support. So first things first. But then also I would love to promote my YouTube channel. My YouTube channel is Hello, I'm Alexa. I make videos about design, careers in tech, life in San Francisco, that kind of stuff. Really trying to focus on storytelling and making design education fun and entertaining. So if anyone wants to become a part of that, would love for them to subscribe. And then also I'm super active on Instagram and especially Instagram stories. So if anyone wants to follow me on Instagram, that's @hello_I'm Alexa. I post content there daily on stories, just about what's going on in my life and career. And I try to make it fun and interactive as well. So those are the places you can find me.
Cool. I'll add both your YouTube channel and your Instagram in the show notes so people can easily find your links to your stuff. Cool. Thank you for being on the show. I think your day starts now and my day doesn't end, but I'm going for dinner and then it's weekend. So I'll wish you a happy Friday and enjoy the weekend. And hopefully we'll speak next, maybe on the next podcast or collaboration. Who knows?
I'd love to, David. Yeah, thank you again so much for having me. This was super fun.
Okay, cool. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to my interview with Alexa. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to visit her YouTube channel and also give her Instagram a visit. I'll include the links in the show notes. If you have any questions, then please send them to david@designers.fm or go to Twitter, that is @designers_FM. I hope you enjoyed this episode. My name is David. This class is dismissed.